You travel the world. You're away from home. Perhaps away from your family. All you have to depend on is yourself. And your luggage.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Are you traveling light or heavy?
Heavy.
Flying?
Flying and by ship.
An ocean voyage?
Yes.
Yes. So, a real journey.
And then I'll be staying on this island, and I don't even really know if I'll be living in a hut or what.
Very exciting.
Well, speaking of exciting journeys,
it's gonna hurt a lot of it.
This is the Air Raid Podcast.
Woo!
This is episode 43.
Philip K. Dick. It can't be.
In what can now be considered a long and drawn out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden. Of course, this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome right into your ear hole. Welcome, 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 everybody. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you so much, whoever Mandelbaum won.
Okay.
Mandelbaum won, which I think is a Seinfeld reference.
I'm a joke maker.
Is on the iTunes. Very nice review that he or she left us there, so we really appreciate that.
I just added two more guys to my wolf pack.
And hope that a lot more of you go to the iTunes and subscribe to the show and leave us star ratings and all that stuff. Anyway, I went into plugs way too early, didn't I?
Because you're ugly and retarded.
It's not my normal MO here. Not my normal MO. But I am tired, once again. Very tired. And I talk about this now every show because I have been going back and forth to the hospital. Mairead, the wife slash producer of the show, is doing well, although very, very bored. We've been dipping into the movie cart at the hospital, which they just kind of leave out in the hallway, and it's got all these old VHS tapes. We've recently revisited Romancing the Stone with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. We also, let's see, last night, what did we watch yesterday? Oh, God, Willow, Lethal Weapon 2, which is by far the best one, I think. God, what else did we watch? Oh, Deep Impact. Yeah, Elijah Wood.
Are you off your fucking meds or something?
God, what else did we watch yesterday? Willow, Lethal Weapon 2, and another really good 80s movie that I can't remember right now. Oh, Joe versus the Volcano, which is where that intro was from.
Woo!
Can you believe that? God, and that movie really, like, reinvigorated my my little boyhood crush that I had on Meg Ryan back in the early years. Man, she was super, super cute back in the 80s, but not so much anymore. I think she still could be super, super cute, but she did that thing to her lips, which doesn't look great. And I think she looks better with straight hair rather than curly hair, too. And, yeah, but man, she was a cutie. And, of course, she played like three characters in Joe versus the Volcano, all very different. Showed her range, which I thought was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive, Meg Ryan. So, yeah, just been watching a lot of old movies, a lot of old action movies. And something I noticed that I had never really noticed before, but man, back in the 80s and early 90s, we really had an obsession with helicopters. Helicopters were like in every movie. It didn't even have to be an action movie. It was like they had helicopters in Joe versus the Volcano. America had an unhealthy obsession with helicopters. I don't know why, but in like every movie that we watched yesterday, from the early 90s and, you know, mid to late 80s, All the bad guys, all the villains, with the exception of Willow, of course, because there were no helicopters back in medieval times. But all the villains had access to helicopters. Does that strike anybody as strange? I'm sorry. I don't know. Just a little weird. Something to think about. Take that to the bank. Take it to the bank. I gotta drink some coffee, huh? Good stuff. But yeah, and on top of watching all these bad movies, or not really bad movies, they're a lot of fun. Like Mairead had never seen Willow before, so that was really cool to kind of get her into some of these older movies that I was absolutely obsessed with when I was younger. Oh, another thing that I was obsessed with when I was younger, Lethal Weapon 2, when that first came out, which was probably, I don't know, that must have been like early 90s, I think. But greatest boob scene in that show, or in that movie. Seriously, like when the movie came to the scene where Mel Gibson's character is doing adult times with the blonde, like, South African lady. Yeah, I was, like, flashed back to young boy Aaron going, oh, yeah, I remember those. Mairead thought that was really kind of weird, too, that I had remembered those boobs. But I told her, you know, that's the life of a young preteen boy. A young preteen boy. Your life revolves around seeing boobs in movies. It really does. It truly, truly does. So I'm sure many of our male listeners can probably relate to that. Maybe many of our female listeners do not. But it's kind of the same thing as, like, you know, men are way more visual creatures than women are. And, you know, that goes along with our sexuality. We need to see stuff, you know. I'm sure a lot of the ladies out there, if there are any ladies listening, I'm sure a lot of you out there can probably remember, like, your Tiger Beat magazine that you had with Jonathan Taylor Thomas in it, and dreaming about how you were going to marry him. I know that one of my cousins is absolutely obsessed with Justin Bieber. And she believes that she is actually going to marry Justin Bieber. And she makes no, you know, it's not a joke to her. Like, when she was telling us, like, last summer, that she may be over this obsession by now because, you know, realistically, when you're a young person, you kind of get over that stuff pretty quickly. But she was telling us this story about how she was going to marry Justin Bieber and everything was going to work out. And, like, you know, he was going to... I don't even know how she expected to meet him, but it was you know, in her head, it was going to happen. So good luck to you there, cuz. Another thing that we've been doing is watching a lot of TV, because Mairead is on bed rest. She cannot get out of bed. She has this was kind of a strange thing, too, because, like, when we got to the hospital, well, first of all, like, the whole hospital thing, I don't know if I've talked about this already. I know I've talked about Mairead being in the hospital, but maybe not about how she got in there. But we do have some complications with the pregnancy. Everything's going to be fine because they actually caught the complication. It was kind of scary, though, once we found out more about what was going on, because they usually don't catch it. And what happens is that the baby actually dies during birth. But since they caught it, they're going to do a planned scheduled C-section, which is coming up on April 28th. So I'm going to be a daddy here real soon. And by the time this episode drops, I think I'm going to have, what, 2 weeks left? Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, about 2 weeks left of being a non-dad. So, this whole thing came up really quick. A couple weeks ago, went into the doctor because we had other complications that they needed to check out. And then they found this new one that was going to, you know, make it so we had to be in the hospital. And we, you know, had to go into the hospital that Monday, which was just a couple days later after finding out. So it was just this whirlwind of events that kind of swirled around us there, if you will. But she's doing fine, since the doctors caught it, they are constantly monitoring her and monitoring the baby, and everything's going to be good. But the bad part about it is that Mairead has to be on mandatory bed rest, and she gets this is a quote I'm quoting here. She gets bathroom and what did she say? Bathroom and shower privileges. So she's only allowed to get up out of bed to go to the bathroom or to take a short shower. And also we get to take 2 wheelchair rides a day, half an hour each, which is nice for Mairead, because we took half an hour one the other day and kind of just went around the outside of the hospital there on First Hill. And it was nice to kind of get her out and get her out of the room. But it was kind of strange, too, because, like, there are these 2, like, big kind of concrete, like, gardens down below the hospital on the first floor. And we wanted to go down there and kind of sit there because there are a lot of plants and stuff. And, you know, it's just much nicer than walking around or rolling her around on the street, you know, with cars driving by and everything like that. But we go down to one of these little, what would you call it? God, like a garden. Okay, let's call it a garden. So we went down to one of these gardens, and there were only stairs up to it. So we couldn't get, there was no wheelchair access up there. And so we're like, well, why don't we just try the next one? And then, so went to the next one, and the only access out to that garden was this really small rotary door, you know, those doors that spin around. And it could, I mean, it was super, super small and super compact. So like I could barely fit in, you know, one of these sections to get out there. And, you know, it would have been cool if we could have, you know, gotten, Mairead could have stood up and like, but she's not really supposed to push on anything or anything like that. But I guess we could have just had her kind of stand there and I could push the door. But then we couldn't get the wheelchair through because the wheelchair was too big. Anyway, it just seems kind of strange that a hospital would have these 2 little gardens where they want patients who have to be inside a lot to go and just chill out and then not make them wheelchair accessible. Yeah, that's a new thing for me. Like, you always hear about handicapped people that are complaining that there's not enough, accessible places, especially for wheelchairs. And it is totally true, even at the frickin' hospital. Can you believe that? I'm not making this up. My time has really been being consumed by, going to work and then coming from work back home, cooking some meals and then going down to the hospital. We've had a lot of visitors, a lot of people bringing food, which has just been awesome. So that's kind of taken the sting out of the whole situation, you know, not having to think about meals and things like that. So a lot of friends helping out right now, which has been great. We have been watching a lot of bad television. And I'll be the first to admit I watch a lot of TV. I'm not I'm not a very active person. I watch a lot of the boob tube. We do not have a cable, as they say. So we get our channels are very limited. Like the only special channels, and special is in quotes, are the Discovery Channel and the Travel Channel. Which, of course, you know, we've talked about before because I have a very odd obsession with man versus food. I watch that from time to time. But at the hospital, they even have worse cable. But they have, like, these, they have A&E, which has some really good programming. And a couple other, it's slipping my mind right now what the other channels are. But there are some really shit. There's some shit out there right now, people. And who watches this crap? I cannot for the life of me figure out who would watch a show on parking police. A reality show based on police officers that go around and place parking tickets on cars. I don't get it. What the hell is that all about? There's also a show. I think this is on I think these are both on A&E, as a matter of fact. There's also a show called Storage Wars about people who bid on storage units that haven't been paid for. Sorry, I needed some more coffee. I'm getting worked up. Who watches that? Who would find that interesting? We, you know, late last night, one of these shows came on. I think it was Storage Wars. And it was just so uninteresting. It was so incredibly uninteresting. And, I mean, we need to get out of this cycle of reality television, because it really is. It's like, not only is it, I feel like it's dumbing down America at a rapid pace, but it's just like, it's so vapid. There's no thought that goes into it, you know? Like, you just watch it and just melt. Like, your eyes droop and your brain kind of shuts off for a little while, which is actually what I enjoy about watching 80s movies. But this just seems, I mean, you know, this is getting to be too much. Like, there's got to be people out there with ideas for programming. And, you know, I called into, I met with Dave of the Imagine Dave podcast, and we went out to lunch, I think earlier. Well, by the time you hear this, it would have been last week. But he urged me to call in and leave an unload, a listener unload, on their phone line, on their podcast phone line. And so I did, and the thing that I talked about was the Discovery Channel, and how all the shows on the Discovery Channel are now like redneck adventures. They're no longer like a learning tool. The only real kind of learning tool that they have on there is like Mythbusters, and they just spend their time now like blowing things up, of course, which is awesome. I love that show. But that's really like the only show that I ever watch on the Discovery Channel anymore. I mean, there's really a lack of like thought-provoking programming on that channel. And you'd think with like something like the Discovery Channel, because it started out as being almost like a National Geographic channel, or you know, like Channel 9, like the nature program, you know, the show Nature. And I really enjoyed that, and because you'd actually learn something, you'd see another part of the world that you wouldn't necessarily see or could necessarily travel to. And that stuff really interests me, and there is nothing like that on the Discovery Channel anymore. It drives me crazy. Even like something that should be somewhat of a learning experience, like Man vs. Wild with Bear Grylls, you know, now has just turned into like, let's see how gross we can make this. Like, I saw a promo ad for one of his shows where he actually like, he gets dropped off in like the Atlantic Ocean or something like that. And so he finds a dead seal, cuts off the dead seal's skin, and makes it into a wetsuit. Just soak that in for a second. Okay, that's enough. Like, what? Seriously? Seriously? Come on, man. A wetsuit out of seal skin? I mean, I guess it's a good idea. Whatever. I don't get it. Anyway, let me get off my high horse here. We've got a great show for you today. Some guests are going to be stopping by soon. The band Leany, which is this band that makes music using a Game Boy and some other electronic things like MIDI and stuff like that. So the lead singer, who is Leany, and she is the one who kind of heads up the band. I think she's kind of the one that writes all the songs and stuff. We're going to be talking to her and the keyboardist for the band, Ryan Love, about how they make this music and how they kind of got into this whole thing, because it's really cool. And I think what we're going to do, we're going to go to this musical break right now, and we're going to hear one of my favorite songs of theirs, called Live Asleep. by Leany. And this is off of their album 8-Bit Heart, which you can find on iTunes or at cdbaby.com. So definitely check these guys out and stick around because they're going to be showing up here real shortly. And once we come back from this musical break, we'll be talking to Leany about all this stuff that they do, because they're involved. They've got their fingers in a lot of things right now, and I think you'll be really interested to hear what they have to say. So we will be right back with Leany. This is Live Asleep off of their album 8-Bit Heart, and we will see you in just a moment. Two parts of the band Leany, Celine Ramadan and Ryan Love. How's it going, guys?
Good.
That is your name, right?
Yeah, you said it right.
Okay, good. also known as Leany.
That's true.
Correct?
Yes.
Well, welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. Welcome to Dining Room Studios. Thank you guys so much for coming. I contacted you, a couple months ago now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we kind of set this up, and I just kind of came across your stuff on the web, and this song in particular, actually, and just totally fell in love with it. And so why don't you explain to us a little bit about your music?
Well, I've been making music since actually just 2005. I've been a musician my whole life, but never really wrote my own stuff till that year.
Right, and you used to play guitar before you went kind of the electronic route, correct?
I started as an acoustic artist, and then I started experimenting with electronic stuff and found the 8-bit / chiptune scene through some research and fell in love with it, and found the cartridge called Nanoloop that...
And that's what you use on the Game Boy,
that's what I
right?
used on 8-Bit Heart.
Okay.
That first 8-bit album that I made. There are other programs I use now, one called Little Sound DJ or LSDJ. But Nanoloop was the first one I found, and I ordered the cartridge. I got a Game Boy from a friend who had one just sitting in her closet untouched, and learned the program and wrote an album.
That's pretty cool. And Ryan, mm-hmm. How are you doing?
Doing good.
So you guys, we were kind of talking before we started recording the show here, and you said that you guys actually knew each other back in New Hampshire before you came out to Seattle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We met at music camp. It's a place called Summer Youth Music School, or SIMS, which is at New Hampshire at UNH.
Yeah, and it's not band camp. It's not band camp.
Not technically, no.
Right?
No, I mean, it was more like kind of like collegiate level music classes for high schoolers.
Okay.
To give them a preview of what to expect if maybe they wanted to go into it more seriously.
Yeah, and you guys kind of explained to me the difference between band camp and...
And SIMS.
Yeah. And SIMS a little earlier. Let's clarify this for everybody listening.
Well, we did technically do band camp too.
Yeah, but not together. So we went to two different high schools in the same town.
Uh huh.
But band camp is technically when you go to school a couple weeks before school starts and you learn the football halftime shows.
Right, right.
So that's what we always called band camp.
Yeah. And it's like the vetting process, right?
Well, you learn your basic pinwheels.
Yeah.
And
your pinwheels.
Number 11s.
You learn how to do giant cymbal crashes.
Yeah. But I played the marimbas.
Me too. Yeah. We actually played the same thing in rival marching bands.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we were both on the vibes and the marimbas being wheeled down the street on carts.
Yeah.
In the parades.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow. So you guys, would you be considered band geeks?
High school, probably.
In high school?
Yeah.
Not anymore.
I mean, sure,
though.
Maybe still. Fine.
Yeah.
You can call me a band geek. I wouldn't be offended. It was fine. I played the oboe, and you can't march with an oboe, so I...
You played the oboe? That's the huge, long thing with the little skinny mouthpiece that comes off of it, right?
Not huge and long. That might be an English horn or a bassoon you're thinking of.
Oh, bassoon. That's,
yeah.
That's the thing.
My sister played the bassoon. Yeah.
Really?
I played the oboe. She played the bassoon. We were the double reed sisters. And
but they were really good, actually.
Oboe looks like a clarinet, and
it has
a double reed.
Okay. And double reed as in the little wood piece that...
Yeah.
How does that work?
So basically, there's no mouthpiece that a single reed would go onto. So you need a double reed because the whole reed is sort of the mouthpiece. And then you have to get your embouchure right to put your mouth over the reed and get the sound. And it takes a while just to get a sound out of that thing.
I can imagine.
Weeks.
Yeah.
And
it's like one of those instruments. Like, were you guys ever into Star Wars?
No.
No?
What?
Totally.
Come on.
I
play
that.
Game Boy music.
I know.
No, I was into comic books. Like, X-Men and stuff.
Well, I was just going to say, like, some of those instruments, like the bassoon or possibly the oboe, were one of the instruments that George Lucas didn't have to change at all to make them look alien.
It's true.
You know?
They're very...
In the cantina scene.
They're bizarre instruments. Yeah. And there wasn't a lot of people who played those in New Hampshire, so I think I was third in state. And
just by default or something?
Maybe.
Or,
I was okay. I don't think I was that good, but you know.
So you guys met at this at SIMS, which is not band camp.
Yep.
And how old were you? How old were you then?
I was 14.
Yeah, so then I was 15.
Yeah.
Okay.
We dated ourselves.
Yeah.
Oh well.
And then when did you move out to Seattle? You were saying your dad lives out here, right?
And so he did. And I moved out here in 2004.
Okay.
And then you were like in 2005.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. That's so weird. And then you kind of met up on the web.
Yeah.
Some social networking.
Yeah. So. We were friends in high school. We, we're obviously hung out a lot. And then... When we went to college, we really went our separate ways. We didn't really talk for years. And then I was in Seattle on my computer, and some email address popped up that I was like, who is that? And it was Ryan. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I haven't talked to you in forever. And he's like, I'm thinking about moving to Seattle. And that was the first time we had talked in years. And so then when he moved out here, obviously we reconnected, and the rest is history.
Yeah. We had to wait for Google.
Yeah. You're just constantly Googling each other's names, seeing where they are. And
if only there were a Google sooner.
Yeah.
So were you doing the Leany project when you first came out here to Seattle? Or
I moved out here in 2004, and I didn't start writing until 2005. I think I had my first year, and I knew I always wanted to, and I just wasn't clicking. And something clicked in 2005 where I could actually... sit down and write a song, and I just kept recording on this little four track I had, and that's when it all started. And I started playing shows pretty much instantly. Like I started doing like the open mics, and then I'm like, well, I'll book a whole show. And I do a lot of theater stuff. My friends are in the theater, so I would, you know, play little theater nights and stuff, and so started out that way.
Nice, yeah. Nice. And so you said you were just playing guitar at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that, like, we talk about a lot on this show when we have bands come on. Getting a show in Seattle is difficult because there are a lot of bands.
Yeah.
Right? Was it difficult for you to get a show? You were saying earlier when we were talking off air, like, that you were kind of lumped into a certain genre that you didn't necessarily think you belonged in.
Yeah, I mean, when you're a female and you play guitar, everyone lumps you into the Phoebe from Friends category, and you do these folk nights, these women in folk, and they're all fine people. I don't have anything against them, but it's just that the music doesn't really match, and it's just the instrumentation that's, just kind of putting you in that category.
Right,
and I think I just got like, well, if I want to play with different types of artists, I probably need to make maybe different types of music instrumentation wise and that wasn't the only reason, but I started experimenting throughout my own like boredom too.
Yeah. Yeah. Did that ever get on your nerves though? Like trying to get a show and they put you on some folk circuit?
I mean, I've played a lot of really bad shows. Like I played in church basements and, you know, that you're just like, what am I doing here? But everyone has to play those shows, you know?
Yeah.
You play those. And I played in a room where every single person in the room, and I looked around, had their back turned to the stage.
Ouch.
And we're all just having a conversation and you're just playing.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't really make a lot of background music. I don't know if it stands up to a background type setting. Like it's kind of lyrically based a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was.
Yeah, it's definitely not Muzak.
Yeah. So it was kind of weird to play those types of shows where no one's listening at all. And
it's always soul crushing to do that too. Especially like was that particular show? Was it on a stage?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yeah,
I played so many of those shows. Terrible. Terrible.
And yeah, so I don't really like those. And I think, but every time I found that I wasn't happy with a certain type of show I was getting, I tried to find other ways of, you know, booking. And, you know, like I said, did kind of more like different types of booking through doing stuff with theater as opposed to like a typical music venue. And I became sort of like a musical guest a lot in comedy shows, which was really interesting.
Right. I think that's actually where I ran across the Leany name too.
Okay.
Is you recently played I think it was at a comedy show at Chop Suey?
Chop Suey, Laugh Hole. Right? Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've just done lots of those. That was kind of ended up being a little niche for me is being musical guest for my friends who did theater and comedy. And
okay.
That was kind of cool.
Okay.
You know, you get a different sort of crowd. It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They're warmed up.
Yeah, they're all warmed up. They're, you know, kind of fun. They're not always, like, ready to dance or move around, but it's okay because they kind of listen to it and they get it and they're lighthearted. It's cool.
Yeah, so you guys, so when would you say that you actually started kind of the more electronic version of your music?
Well, I started that in 2006.
2006?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been doing this for about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
When did you join the project here?
Well, technically, I'm on the very first album. I'm on the acoustic one.
That's true.
Oh, okay.
He does play piano on the first album.
And honestly, as far as doing electronic, I mean, it's literally the matter of me just switching a button. You know, just going from, like, piano to synth.
Right, right.
So,
yeah.
But he didn't join Leany as a band until the last couple months.
Yeah.
I decided, after doing this for 5 years alone, that I wanted, you know, Ryan to do it with me because we play a lot of shows together. We have another project called Leany in Love where we kind of do like a lounge cover act and
nice.
We do this at the Can-Can in Pike Place Market. And it's a really fun show and we get to mess around and be really experimental with cover songs.
Yeah. Do you guys dress up for that?
Yeah, we dress up.
We you get wear the frilly like tux and stuff like that.
We like to coordinate outfits.
Yeah. It's actually part of the rehearsal process.
Nice, nice.
Where within like the first 20 minutes, Leany will be like, so what are we going to play? I'm like, what are we going to wear?
Yeah, he's always the one to talk about the outfits first.
We usually have matching outfits. And we don't really plan ahead for those, but we just coincidentally always end up having them.
Yeah, we're like, well, whatever. Let's just wear whatever. And then,
let's
and
do
then,
a military theme.
And then we show up and we happen to be matching.
Yeah. In like camo pants and
it's really freaky.
We did do that.
We thought, oh well, this will ride out for maybe two or three shows. And like right, a year later, we still
you're
have
still dressing the same.
And they're always different.
Yeah, just happens.
That's awesome. So you guys apparently know each other pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You share a lot of the same likes and dislikes.
I don't know. I mean, I think that we do have a lot of differences between us too.
I think we're ever just getting band fights.
No.
Not really.
No.
No,
we...
Ryan slams the door on me a lot.
Yeah, sometimes she hits me in the face with a skillet. But sometimes I deserve it.
Oh, okay.
What democracy?
Our band rehearsal process is very funny, actually. We kind of... We're like... We have like 24-hour band rehearsals where we'll like meet... Like, oh, are you hungry? Well, yeah, I'm hungry. Let's go. And we eat something, and then we'll have, like, drinks. Maybe we'll smoke some hookah. I don't know.
Yeah, like the first 12 hours is us just getting in the zone.
Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous. We spend a lot of time together.
Yeah.
It may involve watching a movie first.
Yeah. Seriously. Just unwinding, right?
But, preparing for the night. But, you know, we always pull it together, and it's kind of just the way we are. And that's just, you know. Ryan's like a brother.
Yeah.
It's true.
We know each other, and we know how to read each other's moods, too.
Yeah.
So.
And that, that makes for the best music creating process, too, where you guys are so comfortable with each other that it just, you don't care.
Yeah, and I don't feel like bad saying, I don't like the way that sounds. Yeah. Or, you know, like,
right,
I don't feel
right.
like I have to be passive aggressive with Ryan. I can just be like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't take it personally.
No.
No, because also we've known each other musically too for a long time. So we know
we
have the chops and everything. So if we make a bad call on either part,
it's not a personal
thing. It's just
thing.
That.
Yeah.
It's just that. So.
Well, that's awesome. Let's go to this first song here.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to hear Never Afraid.
Yeah, so this was a song I wrote for the Labyrinth CD, which is my second CD. And me and Ryan just redid this version you're about to hear for a Japan Relief compilation.
Okay.
That was done by True Chip Till Death. They had over 100 chiptune tracks donated by different artists. And they raised over $7,000 for Japan.
Yeah.
And
oh,
so
wow.
when you donated money, you got this huge download pack of like all these artists. And
wow.
So this was our contribution to that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I guess one more thing that I wanted to hit on before we go to this musical break. So we call this type of music is called chiptune.
Chiptune, yep.
Yeah. Because I kept on like last week when I was plugging this week's show,
mm-hmm.
I kept on calling it like 8-bit stuff.
Well, that's fine. I guess the only thing about 8-bit is sometimes it's not 8-bit. Sometimes it's 4-bit or 16-bit,
okay.
You know, but
okay.
It's still chiptune music. I guess chiptune really pertains to the fact that you're using the sound card within the video game console or
whatever
console to, you know, manipulate it and make whatever sequenced music that you're making.
Okay, cool. And so when we get back, we are going to talk a little bit about the process of actually making this music too.
Sure.
And like and I've got a little song here that I would like to play for you guys from Super Mario Land.
We want to hear that.
Because I used to play this game just to beat it just to hear the final end song.
You've built it up.
Yeah. I've built it up and it's all gonna come crashing down soon. So we'll be right back with Leany. This is called Never Afraid, and this is off of the Japan tribute. Would you call it a tribute?
What was it? What was the Japan compilation called?
I got it on
Chip for Japan.
Well, Chip
it's on True Chip.
Chip
Delta.
In, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Chip in. It was Chip in for
was
Japan.
It?
Yes.
Oh man,
that's what
oh.
it was.
Damn.
Chip in.
You're good, Ryan.
Wow.
You're good. All right, we'll be right back.
Destruction, they scan and thrive. They are killed.
All right, welcome back. So that was off of some sort of Japan tribute album that we do not know the name of. But where can people find this tribute album if they
It's truechiptilldeath.org or .com. I actually don't know if it's org or com, but it's either one of those. Yes.
Okay. Well, that was really cool. So I guess let's talk a little bit about how you actually make this music.
Well,
first,
it kind of all starts with sequencing cartridges.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, for 8-Bit Heart, I used a sequencing cartridge called NanoLoop for the entire album. And really, 8-Bit Heart is really just kind of me and a Game Boy for the most part. There's only a couple guitars thrown in there every once in a while, but it's very bare bones. When I went into Labyrinth, which was my second album, I switched it up and started composing on Little Sound DJ.
Uh-huh.
Which is a different cartridge made by Johan Kotlinski. I don't know if I can pronounce his name correctly.
So actually, he makes these cartridges that fit into the Game Boy.
He made Little Sound DJ, and I'm probably butchering his name. Oliver Witcho is the guy who made NanoLoop, and he's a German. I think Johan is from Sweden or Switzerland. I'm probably
sounds about right.
Sounding completely
Johan?
Ignorant. Yeah, Johan. Sure.
Johannesburg.
He probably. Anyway, he. Yeah. So they actually made these cartridges like by hand, and people can emulate them and sort of make their own. And there's schematics online for how to make your own. And there's all kinds of that sort of innovation in the chiptune scene. I am not someone who knows how to engineer anything like that. So I appreciate that there's people that are innovating that type of stuff. But that's where it all comes from. People sort of finding ways to manipulate the sound card within a video game console to make music. And so these people made these cartridges that, like, when you pop them into your Game Boy, they act like a game. Like, you start them up and there's a whole interface where you're able to, you know, program your music note by note and store patterns, and then you turn your patterns into songs, and you can edit your waveforms, and, you know, you have, you know, envelope editing functions and all kinds of cool effects and sweeps and, you know, stuff like that.
So let me ask you this. How long on average does it take you to put something like this together?
You know, it really,
because it's not all Game Boy, right? The
no,
Game Boy is just like the, you know,
yeah,
some of the sounds that are going on. It's not the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It really varies. I don't know if I could say how long it takes.
Right.
Because sometimes I know exactly in my head what I want something to be like, and sometimes I learn through doing it, and, you know, sometimes I'll stumble across something. So it really just totally varies. But I think it's like making any other type of music in a way. You know, you just sort of feel around for what sounds good. I don't think it takes especially longer than other types of music, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's just a different sort of programming. And it's anyone who makes electronic music makes it pretty much like that.
Step
sequencing and stuff.
I don't know if I could do it. Like, because I think I've got a very low tolerance for time consumption.
Yeah.
You know? And even, like, doing this show...
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, after you guys leave, I'll probably scream because you can hear that loud hum in the background.
Yeah.
I don't know how to get rid of that.
Yeah, I don't know,
like,
either.
We already tried changing one of the mics out. I'm going to cry, and I'm going to probably throw something at the wall once you guys leave.
Well, you probably shouldn't do that.
Well, I'll try not to.
Okay.
I'll crumple up a piece of paper, and then I'll throw that at the wall.
Okay.
That'll be
my
tantrum.
There's some nice walls in here. I wouldn't want to see them hurt.
Right. That's actually why we had to take this one out.
Oh, there was a wall there.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Because I threw too many things at it. but that's really interesting. I mean, like I was saying, like, I don't think I'd have the fortitude to go along with something like that. I mean, because, you know, playing guitar and stuff, it's like right at your fingertips.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going through files to find different sounds.
Well, that also takes,
I
almost think,
like that.
Well, learning guitar takes a lot of patience because you physically can't do it at first.
Right.
You
that's
physically
true. Yeah,
can't
yeah.
hold down the strings. And then that's a physical challenge. Whereas programming music into a Game Boy, it's really more of a mental, you know, puzzle that once you solve it, you know how to do it.
You know how to do it.
It's not, there's nothing physical that's hindering you. Like, what if your fingers just can't move from one fret to another? What do you do about that? You just have to keep working on it, and that's really tedious. Yeah. You know, I play guitar too, so I mean, I have both, you know.
Right.
I know the frustration of both sides of it.
Uh-huh.
But no.
Did you find it was a big leap to go to doing electronic then?
Yeah.
After playing guitar?
Definitely. I mean, you just use a whole different part of your brain in a way. And I kind of like that because when I get really tired of doing electronic music, I can pick up a guitar and feel like I'm using a different part of my brain in a way, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. And was it a big leap for you? It probably wasn't as big of a leap for you, Ryan, because you play piano.
Yeah.
Actually, for the Seattle Ballet. Right.
I played for a variety of ballet companies and such.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I came out here and I played at PNB and things like that.
Pacific Northwest Ballet. PNB, you and your acronyms. throwing them out there like anyone knows.
Oh, that old thing.
PNB and J. Pacific Northwest Ballet and Jelly.
Yeah. I'm not ready for that jelly.
Yeah.
It's actually, the challenge for me is when we get into things like programming or when something's not working, like, I have no patience either. I'm just sort of and she will say something like really geeky that just flies over my head, like, well, you need to go into your equalizer and check out the analog wavelength thing and then hit the such and such button. And usually at that point, I just step back and say, do it.
Right, right.
And then
just do it for me.
Watch her and have a drink, and then when she gets it all set up, I go back on the keyboard and play it. Yeah.
Well, it seems like you guys got a great working relationship here.
So, yeah. Ryan just likes to Ryan just likes to play, and he can. I mean, he can like go into any setting or any song, any voice, and just like nail it every time. Sometimes if you try to recreate something you did, though, that's challenging because you're really good at just off the cuff playing and just nailing it. But it's like, oh, what did you play that one time? You're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You totally don't remember it.
Well, we improvised together, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a long time. And so we naturally can make up a song off the top of our head, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. Recalling the song, you have to learn it again.
Yeah.
That's always...
Sometimes we're not as good as our improvs.
That has always been an issue with me, too, because on top of throwing temper tantrums and not having the intestinal fortitude to or patience for things that are time-consuming,
mm-hmm.
Not only that, but I'm very lazy also. So, like, I never write
anything
down.
You're really selling yourself here as the third member of the band.
Big time. You guys need a guitar player?
Do you like drinking? Do you like...
I do.
It's like 12-hour band rehearsals?
Well, you just taught me a new drink, the Crystal Light and Vodka,
which is actually
very good.
Yeah, it's tasty.
Yeah, I'm going to start drinking that from now on.
Yeah.
I never write anything down. And, like, when I'm just messing around on guitar, you always kind of, when you... I don't know. For me, like, when I don't play for a long time and then pick it back up,
mm-hmm.
like, something new always comes out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that sounds really good. I'm going to remember that.
We use...
No, does not work that way.
One handy thing that we do is sometimes we don't do any of the Game Boy stuff at all. Like,
uh-huh.
we'll just sit at the piano or with a guitar, and we'll hit record on our iPhone.
Yeah.
And
we just
have to record that stream of thought, and we'll eventually find something.
Right.
I love
how
you said our iPhone. Like, we have a shared iPhone.
Well, the iPhone. The band iPhone.
Our band iPhone that we have.
Our company iPhone. We take the company car, go to one of the other's house. And, yeah. But no, we just have to record a stream of thought.
Right,
and then
we'll
go in there and then expand on an idea.
Yeah, I have a lot of...
God knows we won't remember it.
Like I have a lot of scrap recordings like that, just little ideas we had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, was it a big leap for the both of you? Because it sounds like you guys were kind of, I don't want to say like, well, classically trained, like, you know, musicians where you know theory you guys are aware of theory and
you
probably learned that way. Was it hard to kind of bring out the creative side of things where you're actually writing your own stuff?
I mean, that's what took me so long. That's why I didn't write music until I was 23, 24 years old, is that, like, I always, you know, I played oboe, I was in chorus, choirs, I played guitar, I played drums, I played a lot of instruments growing up, and I was a big appreciator of music. I listened to music. I was obsessed with music, and couldn't seem to write a song by myself. And I'm happy that it happened one day, and I can't tell you how it happened or why, but just one day I was able to complete my first song, and I remember feeling elated and then empowered to just do more, and that's how it happened. I was really frustrated for many years. I sat down with a guitar, and all I could do was play other people's stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
and it seemed like that would be a huge problem for somebody that I'm just thinking of like when I went to college and befriended a bunch of like music majors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them did not write their own music, even though they really enjoyed playing music. And
yeah.
You know, there was one guitar player in particular that really enjoyed the blues, but he would never. And blues is like pretty much the easiest songwriting you can do.
Very
right?
Definite structure that.
Yeah, yeah, right. And but he could never write. He would always play other people's blues songs,
mm-hmm.
and it just like it threw me for a loop. And I remember having a discussion with him one time about, well, why don't you just write your own, you know? And you know, he couldn't.
Yeah.
He said it's not there. Like I can't.
He had the blues.
He had the blues for not being able to write the blues.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really
dark blues.
Yeah.
Yeah. Double blues.
I think when you're classically trained and you know a thing or two about music, you are pickier. So you have a higher bar for yourself.
Yeah, you're harder on yourself.
Yeah, sure. I'm super hard on myself because when it comes to writing songs, I get too into, oh, I need to change up the rhythm, or oh, this is boring, or this is
right.
You know, so actually, the more skill you have, the less flexible you have. Too many tools in a way. You don't know. You can't choose anything. You're just paralyzed.
Yeah.
By steps.
You're like, well, we could write an entire samba album. Yeah. But we're not going to do that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I mean, and these songs are simple, and I have a hard time thinking simple.
Right, right. And sometimes that's what makes the best song, too,
well,
I think.
Well, it's what works.
Yeah.
Because the average listener also probably doesn't care about the same things that you being a music geek would care about.
Right.
Not all the songs are simple, though. I don't think...
Well, not all of them.
I mean, the one we
just...
I don't
mean it in that way.
The one we just heard, Never Afraid, is not very simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you guys play these live, then?
So I have a couple Game Boys, and I have this ingenious little sync. It's like a MIDI cord that has a little sync module on it that Trash 80, who's an amazing chiptune artist from L.A., made. And he sold it to me at a live show once. He was like, here, try this. And I think it took me a while for me to actually try it, or I tried it once and it didn't work or whatever. But all I have to do is just hook my drum machine into that, and then my Game Boy hooks right up into it, and it syncs everything beautifully. And
nice.
So, yeah, I have a drum machine or a laptop, and it goes into my Game Boys, and they're all synced together, and they play together. And then Ryan has synthesizers that he plays on top, and then we both do vocals.
Nice.
So
nice.
That's how we do our live shows.
So was it difficult transferring this stuff to a live show?
It is sometimes, just because when you're like recording, you tend to want to layer things and make, you know, things happen. And then when you try to recreate that live, sometimes you just don't have enough arms.
yeah, totally.
But no, it's not that hard. I think the hardest thing is when there's technical difficulties. Like suddenly this MIDI cable doesn't work. I had a technical difficulty at the Blip Festival in 2009, which was such a drag because that is the, you know, big international chiptune festival. And what you want to do is you want to go there and, you know, definitely like whip out your Game Boys and play something like really genuine and like live. And I actually had a MIDI fail that night.
No.
And so I ended up having to play a lot of my stuff canned. And I always have a backup plan, you know, so that I could always put on a show. But what was a drag is that I didn't get to really have my stuff happen live as much as I wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that can be really frustrating. There's always something that might break or, you know, and since you're using weird technology, proprietary, homemade, handmade stuff,
Yeah, it's bound to happen.
If something goes wrong, you know, you just need to have a backup plan always. Oh, so I always at least have like an iPod or a laptop with all my music beds on it just in case, just because the show must go on.
Right.
You have to
do
something. Or sometimes I'll just plug in a single Game Boy and be like, I'm just going to rock this single Game Boy show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you guys play, like, I was looking at some of the pictures of your past shows, and you do play with a bass player?
We had, we only did like one show with our friend Eric.
Oh, okay.
We did a bass, and we it was a benefit show for a gal who was in a car accident. And that was a Smiths tribute show, which is where our Smiths cover sort of came from. We have a couple Smiths covers we like to play.
Yeah.
We're big fans of the Smiths. And so we played Pneumos and brought our bass player friend along for that. And that was really fun.
Cool. Cool. Now, I'd like to kind of move on here just a little bit and talk about some of these videos that have been made for your songs. Because you have, when I went and looked you guys up, there were just tons of videos, Lainey videos that I found. Like the one for Live Asleep was like this this trip through a car wash in Inner Bay, if I'm not mistaken.
That is.
Yeah. And so you made that video, right?
I did.
You made that one yourself?
I like to make films, and I like, there's certain things in life that I just think are beautiful in some way, and they're mundane things, and I just always love going through car washes and listening to songs. I almost feel like that's like such a great experience for a song. Is like I always like to put on the song I want to hear the most when I go through a car wash, because I love the way it sounds when I'm in there. So that was sort of the concept of the video. It's just like I always love the experience of listening to a song that I'm really enjoying and going through a car wash. So that was really the only thing that was behind that, is and sort of the repetitive aspects of the song. And,
right. Well, I think it fits really well.
And it fits with the lyrics, too. You know.
And then at the end, it kind of reverses. You reverse and kind of go backwards through the whole car wash thing. I thought it was really cool.
Thanks.
That was a great idea. And then you actually have there's a guy down in Olympia that has been making videos for you guys.
Yes. His name is James Franzen, and otherwise known as Gosha Doll or Radio Gosha. He has a couple of different websites, but he's very well known on the web for making these amazing flash animations, and he does them for all kinds of electronic artists. And he found me through, I think, the label Crunchy Records that I'm on. He's friends with those guys, and wanted to make Headphones on Your Heart video, and I was ecstatic, and he just kind of made it, and it was just brilliant. And through his videos, I've gotten a lot of fans through that video and a lot of exposure, and I owe a lot to him for that. And he did a second one for Nothing in Between. I'm forgetting the name of my own song. Nothing in Between, he did another one, and that was really cool.
Now, and these are, we were talking about this before too, like these were the flash animations that were made.
Yeah.
And then you have a couple that made you one.
A couple from Sweden made a video for Overworld, which is a song from Labyrinth. And they have this whole concept of a mole doing a theater show.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I just let them go with that. I was just like, that sounds awesome. And it's such a cool video, and it's all pixel art, because I really wanted a pixel art video, and they just did such a brilliant job.
Well, it looks like it would be something that was on the original Nintendo.
Yeah. I mean, they're super skilled. They were very efficient, and I'm so pleased with that video.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And when you say Labyrinth was the album name that was off of.
Yeah.
Not the movie with David Bowie.
No, although I don't mind any crossover confusion. Yeah. I love Labyrinth.
That is a friend. So what's next for you guys? What's coming?
Well, we're playing 420 at Pneumos with Lisa Dank and our friends Sapin and Concours d'Elegance. It's going to be a really fun show. And we're also making an album.
Yeah.
Our album's called The Only Now,
and we're gonna be working on that this week.
Yeah, we're working on that actually a lot these days.
It's overwhelming a little bit because not only are we working on the recording, I still have to learn some of these songs.
Right.
And plus we have shows coming.
Yeah.
So it's shows and recording, and then we're going to go to New York to hang out at Blipfest and see people sell albums and play some shows. And we're doing a musical guest slot there with some comedy friends of mine.
Oh, cool.
Do a show called Hot Tub with Kurt and Kristen.
That's
going to be super fun. That's Kristen Schaal from Flight of the Conchords. And
She's the
super fan.
Isn't she Mel? Yeah, Mel. In Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
Right? That is an excellent show.
Someone mentioned Bob's Burgers. I haven't seen that. Yet.
But you haven't seen it? Oh, man.
We'll incorporate that into our rehearsal.
It's so fun. Yeah, yeah. But, watch that before you guys play next. Yeah.
One of my friends from doing improv, Kurt, is her comedy partner, and they do this really cool weekly live show called Hot Tub with Kurt and Kristen. So we get to be their musical guest on Monday, May 23rd.
Cool. And now you're also in another kind of project called Romeo and Juliet.
That's right.
Which I came across on the interwebs.
That's true.
And explain a little bit how that project got started.
Well, I was sort of, in the last couple years, I mean, I haven't done that much with Leany because I was really struggling with being frustrated at doing something alone and just not having the drive within me to continue. How much work that was, because not only you're writing, recording, doing all that part of it alone, you're booking all your own shows, you're your own roadie, you are your own publicist, and everyone's like, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And it's like, just you. It's just a lot. And I just got kind of burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wanted to do a collaboration, and I wanted the music to be very different from what I had been making. I wanted to play guitars. I wanted to play, regular analog instruments. And I just was casually looking on Craigslist a lot out of a little bit of boredom. And I found this guy from Pittsburgh named John Michael Carestas, who made this amazing music. It's very sort of, heavy sort of vintage sounding rock, kind of psychedelic sounding rock. And I really liked it and contacted him. And we wrote 6 songs in the first week.
And this was far apart from each other. You guys were just sending these ideas via email.
Yeah, so he's from Pittsburgh, I'm from here, and we just emailed back and forth and wrote 6 songs in the first week, and we're like, well, let's do this, let's be a band, let's make an album. And we just kept doing it. We have now loads and loads of songs, and we just released our first album in February.
Cool.
Called Month of May, and it's 15 songs. And yeah.
And you guys recorded a video, a very interesting video, with like Muppets.
We did. I happen to have friends here in town that are master puppeteers and puppet makers. Uh-huh. And we've done quite a bit with their puppets. Actually, me and Ryan wrote a musical.
What?
Yes. We wrote a musical called A Very Alan Thickmas.
It's epic.
I mean, this is kind of a long time. I have a kind of an interesting history with Alan Thicke, the actor.
Really?
My film group that me and my friends run called the Beta Society,
uh-huh.
we've been doing this tribute to Alan Thicke Christmas show every year called A Very Alan Thickmas. And every year we do a different video offering, and every year Alan Thicke contributes in some way.
Really?
And
no kidding.
So this our third year of doing it, me and Ryan wrote this musical called A Very Alan Thickmas, and it was a puppet movie musical that was sort of like the Muppet Christmas Carol type thing. And we wanted to just be like big with it and be like classic Christmas. We had dogs, we had children, awesome. We had
location
puppets
shoots.
We went to Leavenworth and filmed and we made the whole thing in a month.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what the
we
wrote it in a week. Yeah. We made the whole film in a month, and it's a 38-minute film, but that's still a lot for a month long.
Yeah.
So that's actually online at thebetasociety.com/thickmas, which is, Alan Thicke, Thickemas.
That is so cool. So how did you get Alan Thicke involved in this?
So this is kind of a convoluted. I'll try to boil it down.
Of course, this is the father from
Growing Pains.
Growing Pains,
yes.
Yeah.
We got fascinated with Alan Thicke many years ago when we met John Curley. he started telling us that he met him and that he was just quite a character. And we kind of just, for some reason, we kind of took the idea of Alan Thicke being kind of a funny guy and we just ran with it because he has that voice, like, the Thicke. And so we started playing this weird Chuck Norris game with it where we were like, the Thicke, you know, the Thicke once peeled an orange with his mind, where we say, like, outlandish things as Alan Thicke. It had
always referring to himself in the third person.
Which,
right.
You know, John Curley apparently says that he actually did. So we just kind of took it and ran it. It became this sort of weird inside joke with our friends where we were always being this weird character called the Thicke. So I had this idea that we should do this Christmas show. And so the first, it was just an 80s Christmas cabaret extravaganza variety show. And we told Alan Thicke that we were doing it. We messaged him and said, we're doing a show in honor of you. We don't know if you're ever going to get this message, blah. And I remember, like, a week before the show, he wrote me back and said, you know, and he wrote this letter basically to read to the audience that night.
Right.
That was really
right.
cool.
No way.
The second year we did it, we're like, hey, we're doing this again.
Uh-huh.
And he sent us an original song that he made a music.
That he wrote?
He wrote a song called Bailout Santa.
Yeah.
And he made a music video for it.
Oh my God.
And so we sort of collaborated on a music video. We shot all the B-roll and he shot, you know, the shots of himself singing the song.
Uh-huh.
And we debuted that at the show. And then the third year we made this musical and he does a voice of himself as the puppet that sort of bookends the whole thing. There's a phone conversation between me and him that happened where I'm pitching the movie idea to Alan.
Right.
And so
right.
the whole, you know, that part of it is, you know, we use his actual voice. And we have a puppet, you know, sort of mouthing the words.
Oh, that is so funny.
And, yeah, I've met him a couple times. Went
nice guy.
Very nice. Went down to his house, and apparently we didn't know this, but there was a film crew at his house. And, you know, we knew he was going to be filmed that day, but we didn't know what it was for. And ended up witnessing him kind of coming into a physical altercation with one of the crew members because they were stealing silverware from his house.
Are you stealing silverware?
Yes. And turns out that it was a prank show. He was being filmed for a prank show. And so he got basically punked while we were there. And it was a show called La La Land.
Oh my God. And this is in Canada, right?
No, he's in LA.
He's in LA.
Yeah,
okay.
This was actually in Santa Barbara, just outside Santa Barbara.
No shit.
But
so is he still living off like Growing Pains money?
You know, he still does work. He still does do other things. He was in a show called J-Pod. He does some public speaking stuff.
I saw his diabetes commercial just
He's on a diabetes commercial.
Yeah, he does. I see him. He pops up from time to time.
Yeah, he does. And he does he writes parenting books as well.
No shit.
Yeah. Huh. So he's got his hands all over the place. And you know, of course his son Robin is doing the music and all that stuff. So Alan is still someone we talk to.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how that all happened, but
that is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys you mentioned John Curley. John Curley I think gets mentioned on this show. On this show, the Air Raid podcast, at least once an episode, I think.
Well,
for some reason, he always comes up.
He's a very powerful man.
If you say his name five times in the mirror, he jumps out of it.
Yeah,
if you say his name,
or
five times
he'll
times
appear
in the mirror.
Behind you and slit your throat. Yeah.
Your hair turns curly
with his upside down smile. Is he a nice guy?
He's a great guy.
Is he?
I think John Curley's fantastic. He's been very kind. And over the years, you know, really supportive of various projects I've done. And
right, because you guys, you were featured on, this was probably before Ryan was in the band. Well,
yeah.
Of course, because,
on
Evening Magazine?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a local Seattle variety show,
News
I guess.
Magazine show. Yeah, he featured both my musical act and our film group. So
cool.
They've just been really cool over the years. And they rerun those episodes quite a bit because we always get like little messages every time someone reruns it. But
that's pretty awesome.
I'm a big fan of
awesome.
John Curley. He's nice.
Yeah. Well, that are you guys ready to hear this Mario Land song?
Oh, yeah. I want to hear that Mario Land song.
I want to get to this before we end the show because we're running up against the end here. But I want to get your take on this.
Sure.
And if you do end up using this for one of your songs, you have to give Air Raid credit.
Well, I probably have to give whoever wrote the song credit.
Well, probably Nintendo.
Mario.
Yeah. But no, we'll take the credit. We'll take
the
credit.
All right, yeah.
So here's this. Let's hear this thing here.
We'll give a shout out to Luigi.
I like it.
So doesn't it just sounds so happy, right?
It sounds like you just squashed the crap out of some Koopas.
And he's like flying along. Mario's flying along in this little spaceship.
Of course.
With the princess.
I like it because it's like sort of like a different version of the dun 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 dun. Dun. It's the same rhythm as the regular
well,
Mario theme.
He's also flying with a different version of the princess because that was Daisy.
Oh.
It's not Peach.
Is it? Wait a minute.
Princess Peach
is the Mario princess.
Princess Peach might be Princess Daisy also.
I think they're pretty interchangeable.
He's got a lot of bitches and hoes. There's Toadstool, Peach.
Peaches and hoes.
And Daisy. I'm pretty sure her name is Daisy. We should fight.
This is the jam. Seriously, I would play this game just to hear this song. You think you could use something like this?
I mean, you know, it's not... You can't just, like, blatantly use someone's stuff without...
That's true. That's true.
So, you know, we might be able to write something inspired from it, but,
There you go. All right, that's enough. Jesus
Christ. And, you know, I do want to clarify that, you know, chiptune music is not music sampled from video games.
That's right. It's all...
Which is a confusion written. For people. People think that I'm singing along to a game.
Right, right.
Whereas, you know, it's all, you know, programmed note by note by me. It's all original stuff.
Gotcha. So. All right. Well, let's plug your wares here.
Yes.
Where can we find out about upcoming shows and everything that you guys are doing?
Our hub right now is our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/leanymusic.
That is so easy.
Yeah.
Easy. And you got all the news that you can use on
everything
that.
There. Or you can go to twitter.com/leanirama. Which is L-E-E-N-I-R-A-M-A.
What about your really awesome website, though? You have, like, this awesome interactive website.
I know. My website is fantastic. The problem is I can't edit it, and it doesn't have any current information on it. So, sadly, that website is going to be going bye-bye soon. Because,
really? That's too bad.
It is very sad, because I would love to be able to edit it and add new stuff, but it has not happened in the last 2 years, so I don't think it's going
to. Oh, that's too bad. That is
it's
really
sort of
cool
like a tribute
website.
To 8-Bit Heart now. It's like its tomb.
Yeah, it's sort of all the art was from 8-Bit Heart, and it's so now it's about like 4 years outdated. So I really need make a new website, sadly.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. I really appreciate you coming down to or up or around because you drove down to Fremont before you drove up here. Correct.
That's true.
We took a couple laughs. We went up some stairs.
Yep.
Admittedly.
Yeah. Well, it's been a lot of fun having you guys here, and you guys out there can get your hands on Leany at iTunes and CD.
Get your hands on me.
Or the CD, the music.
The music I would recommend.
The music.
Don't just reach out and touch her, okay?
Don't touch me ever. If you ever see me, please don't ever touch me.
She will kick your ass.
I really don't like that.
She's the size of Xena, the warrior princess. Well, you can find out about us, air-raid.net, on the web. You can get us on iTunes, Zune Marketplace, Stitcher, which is a great app for your smartphones. And please, send us your emails, aaron@air-raid.net. And next week, we have Madge and Dave from the Unload with Madge and Dave podcast. Great, great people. I went out with Dave a couple weeks ago for some lunch. And he's a really cool dude. And we're going to have them on and talk about how they became family friends with Jerry Stiller and Rainn Wilson and all those cool people. So we'll be talking with them next week in episode 44. Can you believe it? My God, it just keeps going. It will never end. And we're going to go out today with another song by Leany, or by the Smiths, covered by Leany. This is Well, I Wonder. And everybody out there, have a great week.